They just got it.
I would be so pissed. Furious. I would be so pissed. Like, so I'm not going to fuck with him.
I know
who he is. I know who he is. But I would be so mad if someone hit me with wavy hair like that, dog. Could you fucking imagine?
Like, was
Could you imagine getting punched by a man who has that fucking 1970s doo-wop hair?
I was like, is he Mexican, Puerto Rican?
Get my baby powder, dog.
I'm like, wait, pop. Oh,
hey, that's what I'm saying. Bro, listen. Just like as far as not wanting to lose that competitiveness, like, you know how Tom Brady, he feels like that's home to him. Being on the field is home to him, and like removing himself from the situation, it seems like he can't do that right now in his life. Like, is that one of them things where were just like, you know what, let me see if I still got it?
It wasn't even really a competitive thing, because, you know, like, when I sit back and I look at it, like, I'm not okay with losing.
Yeah.
But like, when I leave that, I'm okay with losing. You know what I mean? And what I mean by that is, like, I give everything that I have when I'm out there. And I know, like, for my fight, like, I trained, like, as hard as I could. I put everything that I could into the fight. And I never did that with sports before, like football. Mm. Like, I didn't really do that. So, like, now that I'm older and more mature and, like, you know, I can look back and see those types of things, like, what you need to do to be prepped for that.
Right.
You know, it makes it a little bit easier. So, I never, like, I am competitive. I do want to win.
Yeah, for sure.
But, you know, at the end of the day, like, I never stopped being competitive. Like, it more so came for me, like, from, like, a mindset perspective. Like, getting, like, there's a lot of guys that are at jiu-jitsu that, you know, if you walked into the room, you might be like, oh, he's the tallest. He's, you know, he played Division I football. He'll tear everybody in here up. And there's guys in there that are like, well, behead me, you know. And it's pretty cool to know that. So, like, when I train with those guys, I have to, like, go to a certain place and say,
you got
to
kind of humble yourself because, you know.
Well, they're going to humble you.
Yeah, that's what's going
to
happen.
They're going to humble you. So the thing is that when you're in that position, you then have to make a decision. Like, am I going to fight through this or am I just going to tap out? So, like, you know, for me, getting into, like, those difficult positions and being able to not physically get out of them, it helps me out here in the real world, because whenever I have a problem that's going on, like, you know, I can't get my computer to work or something, you know, like something that I'm not good at. You got to figure it out. Right. And, or maybe that's a bad example, but like when something goes wrong with work, you know, for an example, or like something doesn't go the way that I expected it to go, you know, you can relate back. Well, that wasn't as bad as having that guy's like shoulder in my neck and I couldn't breathe, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's dope that you're not afraid to go into something that you're probably going to suck at first until you get good at it. You know what I'm saying? Because anything new that you try, just like you, he just got this MacBook. He's terrible at it right now.
Terrible.
But eventually he's going to be a beast.
I still want to know why I got it, but that's a big
problem. But you're doing something.
I feel like because you sit closer to him.
You know what I mean? That people can see. So, like, you have an opportunity to fail in front of people, and to be able to do that, it takes a lot of bravery. You know what I mean?
Did we ever even introduce who we're talking to?
We never do. We just start going.
Oh, we start going. We always do.
We just flow.
But, hey, yo, you can introduce right now if you want. Yeah, before we get deep.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we touched on a bunch of things. Edit that down, you know what I'm saying? Do whatever. Right now, we're talking to one of my good friends, somebody I went to school with in college, hanging and banging, Mella Yella, you know what I'm saying? That boy Moy, you know what I'm saying? My man Jermaine Moy, you know what I'm saying? Clap
Jermaine Moy. Yes, sir.
Welcome to the pod.
I'm glad you came, man. Listen, this
Seth better give me some gas money. That was a long drive.
Hey, how long was the drive?
It's only like an hour.
It's like an hour.
You just jump right on. That's right,
a trip. I mean, that's
like
a trip.
You know? Notice he said Seth. He didn't specify which one. You feel what I'm saying? This shit is deep. My shit just already got split.
So what about, I'm on this pod before we get deep, because we got a lot to talk about.
Yeah.
Some current events. There's a lot going on right now.
A lot going on. So this week, what about yesterday? I broke two ribs.
In your elbow.
In my elbow, dog.
Bruh, so that's
why you told me you're
injured. Did I think you was talking about injured. Moy?
Nah,
I
think
assumed
he broke somebody?
Yesterday morning, I leave my house to go to work.
That's early.
Yeah, 4 o'clock in the morning. we had a snowfall, right?
Mm-hmm.
Snowfall. I'm leaving my house.
Just not the show.
I slipped down my first step, land straight on my ribs. I'm talking about feet to the sky on the ribs.
Seen laces.
Oh, gone. Boom. Fell on my ribs. Bro, I have never felt a pain like this in my entire life. But the adrenaline was so crazy. Like, I fall, I'm hurt, but I got to get to work.
But I ain't no bitch.
Yeah, I got to get to work. So I got in my car, drove to work. I'm there for like 2 hours. And I'm just like, yeah, this is...
Something's up.
This is crazy.
This is a different type of pain.
I'm not one to complain about anything. Like, you know, I deal with, you know, different bodily injuries and things like that. I just deal with it. It was like 2 hours in, couldn't function. Went to the hospital. They x-rayed me up. I'm just like, yo, something got to be wrong. They x-rayed me, broke ribs. And I told them, I was like, yo, x-ray my elbow because my elbow is hurting like crazy right now. I don't know what's going on. But all I felt at the time was my ribs. They x-rayed my elbow. My elbow's cracked all the way down the side.
But dog, I don't understand how you like breathe and function. Like, I know it hurts, but I'm like, I fucked up one of my ribs before just in football, just getting cracked back on. And my shit got split. And I was like this. I was out for like, I want to say like 4 days. Couldn't breathe. Pillows underneath me, you know what I'm saying? Can't move around. And you're just like, yeah, highly functional.
I think
is probably sleep,
I'm probably
right?
More of an athlete than you was. That's the only thing I can, you know, you couldn't breathe, I can breathe.
You got malleable ribs. I don't, you know, say you stretch yours out.
Yeah, bro. So like I've been down all day long. I couldn't do anything all day. I was just looking up Jermaine all day. Mm. I'm like, oh yo, what was the stats at West Virginia? Let's talk about that. Let's do this.
Did you find anything good? The four plays that I
will go ahead and say your stats at West Virginia. I was thoroughly disappointed.
but here's the thing though. So I know this about Jermaine. Like, he was a star athlete in football.
Yeah, of course.
But didn't you also get drafted in baseball?
No. I didn't get drafted.
Okay, but you played baseball, and then you played.
I did have some opportunities to play baseball.
And then didn't you go to West Virginia? And then because I remember this because he was hitting me up when I was at YSU. He was like this. He was like, this shit ain't working out. These boys got me like number 37, and they tried to put me an outside linebacker. He was like, not me, chief.
So when I got recruited to WVU,
shout out to Rich Rod.
Yeah, so let me just, you know, I'll kind of give you guys a breakdown of like how I got to West Virginia. So, mm-hmm. You know, I always wanted to go Division I. You know, everybody always talks about, I'm going D1. That's like pretty much all that we ever talk about, like as kids in high school. It's like, I'm playing D1. So like, I didn't have any plan or any work ethic for school to go D1. I was just like, I'm going D1.
I'm nice.
I'm just going D1.
They're going to come find me.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm playing single-A football, too. So, you know, and then, like, the reality check was when I got into the Big 33 game, and I'm like, dude, like, these guys are humongous. Like, they're huge. Like, they're fast. And I'm like, I got a lot of work to do. But, you know, so WVU was the only school that offered me because I was academically ineligible. Because I took the SAT one time, and I was like, you know, I'm never taking that again, and my scores are between me and Jesus, so.
No, it's not. You told somebody, because I heard it, but you know how over time.
My scores are between
me and Jesus. I think you get 600 for writing your name on the paper. So.
I think it's like 400. Right. So,
something like that, yeah.
But, you get down. Well, your team went back-to-back state champs, right?
Yeah.
And then, you had some other guys on there that were getting some looks and whatever else. Like, so you guys, like, had, like.
Yeah.
Tate, like you guys was out there. Like, that's he was how, nice. Like, and he was like the best player on the team, really.
Well, I mean.
No, I didn't went to a couple games where I was like, if he wasn't in this game, they definitely would have got scored on. It might have been a wrap.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I mean, to be honest with you, like, I mean, I did have a pretty good career, you know, from a high school perspective. But, you know, that's the thing is, like, it really was a team atmosphere. Like, I think that's the one thing about me that a lot of people probably wouldn't know is, like, I'm a team player. Like, I want to win.
Right.
You know, I don't know my stats. Like, I mean, I know I ran for 1,000 yards, but I wasn't like, I ran for 1,000 and this many touchdowns. Like, but I know we won. I know we were 34-6, you know, in 3 years with 2 state championships. Mm. And, you know, so like, those are the things that are important to me.
Eat that.
I don't want no.
Hell no.
Nobody does.
But keep that shit in there.
Yeah. So, you know, the thing was, is that our game was obviously running the ball, you know, so we pounded the ball, you know, just power eye and, you know, full house and
just murking cats.
Yeah, and, you know, the first quarter, everybody comes out all gassed up, but fourth quarter, we dropped 40 something points on you and, you know.
So what was the difference, the transition from high school to college? Like,
because you definitely just said
you saw it in the Big 33 game and then you went to college, like.
And that's when they had Pac-Man,
you had nothing
Chris
but,
Henry.
You had nothing but success in high school. What was the difference? Like, was it humbling on any type of level?
Well, I don't think that it's humbling. I just think that, like, when you get to the Big 33 game, like, well, first of all, I was kind of like a fish out of water.
Okay.
Because we played zone at my high school, you know, and now we're playing man. And I'm a safety. So, like, when they say, hey, Jermaine, go down there and play man, and there's a dude that runs a, you know, 4-4 or 4-3, and I'm like, oh, man, like, this, how do you even cover somebody, you know? And I wasn't a basketball guy either, so, like, you know, I wasn't, like, shuffling my feet, knowing how to cover somebody. I'm looking to, like, knock somebody's lights out. That's what I want to do.
Yeah.
So it was humbling to me because I was like, oh, man, like, I'm going to have to learn how to play man-to-man. And so the very first thing that happened when I got to West Virginia, Tony Gibson, he's the one that recruited me, they saw my back pedal, and they're like, you're going to strong safety. Mm-hmm. So they moved me to strong safety. And, you know, there's two positions. So there's spur and then there's bandit. So we ran a 3-3-5. And, you know, you got 14 people.
Yeah, I remember you guys were like the first ones to start doing that. Because I remember Blackout got that like right after West Virginia was balling.
Yeah.
And that's weird, 3-3-5.
It's different.
It feels sure. like it's wide open. It's like, how can't you get a first down if you run three straight right here?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely different. But I didn't have a whole lot of experience with it, as you know. So, but... they moved me down to strong safety, and then the following year, there were some different injuries over at wide receiver, and they decided to move me over to wide receiver. So I fractured my collarbone on my 21st birthday, and I tried to play with it. And I was behind Chris Henry, so, you know, rightfully. Like,
that's NFL.
He could have been a first-round draft pick.
Easy.
Easily. I mean, he's 6'5", runs a 4'4". Right.
Who was the quarterback at that time?
Rasheed Marshall.
Okay, because they had some dogs. They had, like, because I remember, before I broke my leg, like, I was going, and I was like, yo, man, I think I might be going down to West Virginia. Shut up, Job. You know what I mean? You went down there, there was 100 people in there. You ain't getting no personal recruits, all right?
West Virginia Wesleyan, probably. But no, for real, I do got to tell you guys this. But Seth actually is one of the hardest hits that I've ever taken.
By accident.
Yeah. I hate this.
Yeah. No, he's not somebody I give kudos to.
Yeah, I hate this. No, it was literally by accident. We were in practice. He did like a slant.
Yep.
I went to go.
This was at Cal?
Yeah, I went to go like for the ball, and he just like basically like, I'm going to the ball. So he's like going through, and it just was like the collision was crazy. But my body was already down like this. And he was like, damn, dog, what the fuck? And I was like, you know, that's how I get down. That's how I'm giving it up.
What
did you expect?
Double A ball, stop playing.
No offers, you know what I'm saying? Slippy Rock, son.
He hit me pretty hard, and I just remember getting up, and I'm like, man, like, I never, ever let Seth know he hurt me. So, like, I'm not laying on no damn field.
You know? Right.
Gotta get up. Still be talking. Yeah, I walked back, and, you know, it was just like I had the wind knocked out of me, and it was a hard shot.
So you left out of West
Virginia. Hold on, you was telling the story about you fractured your collarbone.
So I fractured my collarbone playing behind Chris Henry. You know, my day, a Division I day is already, you know, pretty
mapped out. You wake up, you are checking in, you are hitting meetings, you are lifting, you're doing practice, and then you're right back down to study tables and all the way to sleep.
Athlete, student.
I mean, I can tell you what the schedule. So
I just
at 5:30, I would get to the training room. I'd have to get, like, you know, the treatment for my collarbone. I had two broken fingers too, so I still can't make a full fist with that.
Damn.
And then, you know, so from 8 until 10, you got workout, or 6 to 8, you work out. From 8 till 2, you have classes. You got to be over to the stadium by 2:00, 2:30, because you have study hall. Then you have practice.
Study hall or film?
Film and then study hall. Sorry. Okay. Yeah, so you have film, then you have study hall, you have film, and then you go to practice,
and then
you have training table. And then you have
study hall.
And so, like, that's your day.
And that's until, like, and then you walk out at 10 o'clock and you're dusted.
8 or 9 o'clock at night. But what people don't understand is, like, kind of like what I do now with MMA is, like, it's a lifestyle.
Yeah.
You know, it's like.
That's who you are.
When I train on these days, they're not negotiable unless I have something to do with my family or, you know, I slip and fall, like.
Right.
So for the most part, like, it's a lifestyle. And that's kind of the way that it was, you know, whenever I was at WVU. And then when I transferred to Cal, it was like, you guys have, like, so much time.
It was nothing. Like, you didn't do nothing at Cal. They didn't care if you lifted. It was like, we're just going to throw all this money at all these guys we know. And whoever pans out. And
what was the bars called there? The two bars? J. Cole's.
J. Cole's and McMo's.
And McMo's.
Yeah. Don't let Signature's ride out. Signature's had the fire and dirty
that,
food. McMo's.
That was, and the Subway was open until 2 o'clock in the morning.
Right? You could get, hey, shout out to Joe Slappy, 6-inch toasted.
But anyway, so the fractured collarbone. Fractured my collarbone on my 21st birthday. Mm-hmm. Was playing behind Chris Henry. You know, obviously I didn't really expect any playing time playing behind him. But he ended up leaving, like, just for whatever reason. He just disappeared. So I'm like, oh, like, this is my opportunity to play. You know, and I'm, like, kind of, like, pumping my arm, like, running in practice and stuff and trying to play with a fractured collarbone. And, you know, I remember I was literally, my day would start at, like I said, 5:30 in the morning, I would be at the stadium. And I did that for 2 weeks straight because we had a bye week and we played the following week on a Thursday night in Connecticut.
They played hella Thursday night games back then.
So I'm running around telling everybody, like, yeah, it's my time, man. I'm about to play. You know, I'm getting in the game. You know, and I was already on the kickoff team, played special teams and stuff. And I'm running down and, you know, first thing I try to do, and even with a collarbone, because your adrenaline's going.
Right.
And I'm like, I'm going to hit this dude. I'm going to let these guys know, like, I'm here. Ready. I'm playing. And I hit the dude, and I was like, oh, no.
Gone.
I shouldn't have did that. But I stayed in the game. But so Chris Henry wasn't even supposed to travel that game. And we were in a sticky situation with Connecticut. And that's Dan Orlovsky, the guy that's,
he was a quarterback at the time. Was Butler up there at that time? D-Butt?
Dan Orlovsky, he went to West V?
No, Connecticut.
Connecticut.
Yeah, okay. they were low-key all right that year.
Yeah, and, you know, the game was pretty close in the first half. And, you know, they're like, Jermaine, be ready. And I'm like,
I'm dying, right, B.
I'm on the bike, and I'm like, I'm ready. You know, I'm telling my family, we're on ESPN. I'm ready to go. Right. I'm
ready. This my time. Fuck this collarbone. I feel
it. Get it.
I'll get a new one.
I'll get a new one. And so I remember the first quarter pass, the second quarter pass, halftime come. You're like, be ready. Third quarter pass. Now we're up like 41-7. Mm-hmm. And it's like the fourth quarter, and we're down to like the last like 6 minutes. And like, and I'm pissed. Like, I'm mad. I'm pretty mad. And I remember, so the wide receivers coach was up in the box, and he calls down, and he's like, tell Jermaine to go ahead and go in.
You said no.
I told him, you could tell him to kiss my ass.
Oh, that's the worst you could have done. Wow, see, you at a school that's balling right now.
It was crazy.
That pride got in the way.
Nah, well, the GA told me, you know, he comes over, he's like, hey, coach wants you to go in. And I'm like, the way that I felt disrespected, because it was like, I put all that time, all that effort, I put all that energy in. And they ended up putting Chris Henry in the game because it was a close game. So
okay.
We needed to get the win. So, and I wasn't mad because they did that. I was, because we won, you know, but I was more so disappointed because, like, I felt kind of, like, humiliated. Like, they were telling me that I was going to do all this stuff. I was going to be playing. I was going to be here. I was going to be there.
Just gas. And just making sure.
Mm-hmm. And that was, I made my mind up that day that was my last game with West Virginia. But, I mean, like, I wasn't going to quit because, like, I already had the mindset of, like, I'm not a quitter. I never quit.
Oh, anything. So you weren't.
And you're just not done playing football.
No. What are you saying? Hey. So you finished out the season with them, but you knew immediately. As soon as this is over, I'm walking this office.
Yeah. Because we were at the airport, and the coach goes, when we get back to West Virginia, we need to talk. And I was like, yeah, I think we do. And
so everybody had the same feeling, pretty much.
Oh, no, listen. It was.
What do you mean?
It was a wrap for you.
Do you feel like after you made that decision, when he said, we got to talk, that he felt the same way that you felt? Like,
no.
Like it was over.
But you understand, Jermaine's not like, okay, Chris Henry is talking to a coach like that. I mean, you better call up in that box and tell that motherfucker put me in the game. Yeah. Well, this is a second round talent. You know what I mean? Now Jermaine's getting ready. He's doing this and that. Cause I remember Bibby did the same thing out of YSU. The coaches know who the fuck who they can fuck and who they can't because that's still their job. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you can see like the dynamic, whatever. So when he says he's not getting in the game, oh, they're like, oh, we better make an example. Like, we're probably going to do something crazy to him. Like, we're going to make him bend the knee, basically.
They were.
But I couldn't imagine Rich Rod was going to be like, we're cool with this.
Nah, it was actually like they showed me a lot of love after that.
Did they? They felt like they fucked you?
I mean, nobody ever really said that. You
right.
know, but I mean, but after that point.
Was there a little empathy behind it, though?
It was over for me. Like, I stopped going to class. They're like, oh, well, were you at class? I'm like, yeah. They're like, well, they said you weren't at class. I'm like, well, I don't know why. Like, well, are you lying? I'm like, y'all lie to me every damn day. You lied to me about going to Connecticut, playing in Connecticut. So, you know what? I don't want to.
It was over.
So, yeah, it was like really, really over. Like, I was done. And, you know, I had a bad attitude, but I was young. I was immature. I didn't have any like male guidance. You know, and the only person you could talk to is your mom. And my mom's like, honey, it's going to be okay. Right. You know, you're good.
But, Ma, you don't understand.
I love you regardless, baby. I love you regardless.
You know, it's like, you know, she just doesn't understand like what I'm going through. And I'm trying not to like stress her out because, you know, obviously, like, you know, I'm supposed to be there. I'm trying to get to the league to take care of my mom, you know, and be where I'm supposed to be. So it just didn't work out. I was So you I let them know that I was going to be transferring.
Would you, if you went back, would you make a different decision at that moment? Would do you feel like you look at it differently now, or you still would have done the same thing?
I mean, for that particular situation, I mean, you know, I don't. Maybe I didn't grow up any, but I probably would do it the same way.
Okay.
To be honest with you, but
you don't. So you wouldn't have been like, you know what, fuck it, let me get this time. You know what I mean, inside, like on the game, just for a film. You know what I mean, on any? So you were just like, fuck it anyway.
So at that time, you were a junior.
Sophomore.
Okay. So for me, you know, like the decision that I made, like I was completely comfortable with that, and I was. It was over for me. Like whenever I cut ties and I'm done, like I'm done.
I was about to say, because he ain't gonna lean forward.
I'm not changing my mind, and I made a promise to myself that you know
your boy went out.
You went out.
Yeah. But no, go ahead.
I just made a promise to myself that you know, like once
I'm gonna go get into the right situation.
Yeah, I'm done. It's over.
Well,
and the thing is like you know
we back.
So a lot of the coaches were like, hey, you know, they were bringing me to their offices and stuff and saying like, hey, you know, you got a lot of talent. You're the future of the program. But it was over. Like it was done. It's like
you severed this relationship by gassing
like
me.
It was.
But do you think that was a lot of pride because you was telling people you was about to get on, so you know there was eyes on you, and you didn't want to be that type of guy to be like now everybody's gonna be like put the hate on you. Like man, he didn't even get in the game.
It wasn't a pride thing. It was a feeling thing. I remember how I felt in that moment,
and I was like unwanted.
It wasn't even unwanted. It just felt like it was disloyal. Like you told me something and then you didn't follow through with what you said.
Yeah, man, I feel like coaches just think that you should have expected that.
And so, like from that point on, it was like anything that they said to me was just like
it's all bullshit.
You're just talking.
Now I'm not buying in.
Yeah, like I.
So just, it was straight to Cal after.
No. Okay, this is what I want to ask.
So I finished the season. You know, I did finish the season because I don't believe in quitting anything.
Yeah.
You know, so I finished the season unhappily. Kind of like this.
Whole time.
But, you know, I didn't quit. And they did threaten me. They're like, you know, if you keep with this attitude, you're not going to go to the Gator Bowl. And I was like, so I got my stuff right for 2 weeks and then went to the Gator Bowl, got my gifts. And once I got my gifts, I was like, yeah, all right, send me home.
See ya. See ya.
And then they was like, you know, I was gone. And then, you know, I just was, because you have a big gap. I mean, not a big gap, but for us in college, it's a larger gap because you have like 2 or 3 weeks off of like, you're
just
off.
Practice.
Yeah.
It's like this is kind of weird that there's so much time. Like,
right.
It doesn't even make sense. It seems like a year,
mm-hmm.
and it's only like 2 weeks. So I just randomly made the decision one day. I was like, you know what? I'm driving distance. I'm going to drive down there.
We're talking about Cal.
No, to WVU. So I called Coach Rodriguez and I was like,
oh, so you was off? You was up here?
We were on like winter break. Like
winter break. Yeah.
You know, like after the holiday and all that stuff. So I made a call down there to make sure Coach Rodriguez was in town. I called a meeting and I walked up in there and told him, "Hey man, I come here to get my release papers." And he was like, "Boy, what you mean? You wanna leave?" And I'm like, "Yeah, like I'm out of here." And he tried, like literally, he sat there with me for an hour trying to convince me to stay.
Because that's on-site recruitment. Like I don't have to do anything. He's already plugged and like we already know what we got.
Yeah, and I just told him, I just said, look, I mean, I'll sit here and listen to you as long as you want, but I'm leaving.
I'm gone. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You got nothing for me right now.
Yeah, and, you know, I know that they were a little unhappy about me leaving, but, you know, I was unhappy with the situation, and I just felt like the hardest part of the season, which I'm sure you kind of know a little bit from Cal, the hardest part of the whole season isn't the regular season. It's once the season's over and you got to go into like the tour of duty is what we called it. It's like getting prepared for spring practice and all that stuff.
Yeah, okay. I mean, not from Cal, from fucking YSU because yeah, Cal was like, straight bullshit.
Yeah, like I mean you have to be mentally prepared for that.
Are you talking about like the 6 a.m. workouts and like, oh man, listen, if I'm not going to be on this team, especially West Virginia's workouts, I mean, they're notorious.
Yeah, you.
I thought this whole
time that practice didn't start until. I mean, training didn't start until spring practices.
Training, I don't know when training.
I didn't
starts.
Know. I didn't
you,
know
you get like a 3 week period,
like right after like the bowl games.
Yeah. So for us, there's the bowl game, which is normally like you know the first of the new year, January 1, and then we have off until like January like 14th or something like that,
which is crazy.
So like I said, I mean it's like almost like a full 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And when you go back. Like, you start your new classes or whatever, but, like, in that process, you're working out. Like, you got more. There's 3 different workout times. At least for us, that's how it was. There was, like, a morning, a later morning, and then an early afternoon. And you have to pick a time.
That fits your class schedule.
That fits your schedule. And mine was always 6 in the morning because I want to get it over with.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not
for the weak hearted.
That's what I want to know. How bad were those workouts? Because I mean, the ones we did, I mean, it was just like 6 a.m. work. I mean, before the 6 a.m. workouts, like they were just crazy to me because I was like, Beaver Falls, we never worked out. Like
never.
Like I thought I was working out,
you
but
didn't
I was
have
just,
to.
I was just lifting. I mean? No, you didn't. Nobody did. Like it just wasn't. It was like you start working out a month before camp, then you're straight. These motherfuckers never stop working out. And I was like, this shit is crazy.
You know what I mean? It was selfishly us, this podcast, this season, we trying to bring on as many people as we can that kind of help us progress forward. For sure. So whether it's financial or whatever. And when he brought up life insurance, I thought that that would be great. So I'd love to talk about how you got into it and we can go into what life insurance is.
Yeah, but at the same time, I think we've known life insurance is or what how it's supposed to work.
Yeah, for sure.
But we all know somebody where, you know, you pass away and now nobody has any bread. You know what I'm saying?
Not somebody, most
people. That's what
people that we, that where we come from, that's what it usually
and
looks
then,
like.
Yeah, so we want to get into like the details of like the pitfalls of it and then like the benefits of, you know, what we can do to try to, you know what I mean? Because, but we'll just go ahead from here.
So first and foremost, the way that I got into it was through jiu-jitsu, training at the Mat Factory up in Lower Borough. So the place is just like, it's a small kind of hole in the wall kind of place, but one of the best places I've ever been, you know, great people. And there I met Simon Arias. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the name, but he's the CEO of the company, Arias Agencies. Whenever I met him, you know, I told him like, hey, like I spoke with some guys down in Morgantown when I was living down there. And they were trying to get me to come in and do it. But, you know, they just said, like, do you want to sell life insurance? And I'm just like everybody does. Like, no, I don't need life insurance. Like, get away from me, dude. And, you know, like when I talked to him, he really explained it to me kind of like, you know, what it represented, how, you know, you're helping people. And, you know, he used some different stories and so forth that, you know, helped me get a more clear understanding of like, oh, wow, like this is actually something that people really do need. And especially people where I come from, you know, that are, you know, uneducated to life insurance.
Right.
So, you know, one of the questions that, you know, always sticks out to me is like, so people that have families is like, if you were to die today, and let's say you have three kids, how will those kids be taken care of if you're not here? Because you got to think. So they lose you. They lose your income. Mm-hmm. If you owe any money on the home, if you owe any money on the car, if you have any debt, anything like that.
Just paying for the funeral.
And just paying for the funeral in itself. I mean, that could really, really, really set a family back, you know, from a financial perspective.
Because that's like $5,000 just for the cheap, just to get burned.
At least 10.
Yeah, about
10. No, I'm talking about just like getting like, okay, burn me up.
Okay.
And yeah, like cremation.
Yeah.
It's like $5,000.
Yeah, and it just depends on like where you're at, where you go, you know, and so forth. But, you know, a lot of people still want to do burials, but cremations are becoming more popular just because people are just like, you know, it's too expensive. I don't want to pay for that whenever, you know, I'm not here. So the way that I got into it was through jiu-jitsu, and, you know, he brought me out, explained everything to me, and I thought it made sense, and, you know, I just jumped into it and started learning as much as I could about it, and I'm still learning a lot today. You know, I've been doing it for just under a year. I literally started the day after, well, the weekend, I fought on Saturday, and I started the following Monday, and I've been committed to it ever since, so... You know, I'm all in. You know, it's something that, you know, I'm going to be doing for the rest of my life.
So it's there's a company that you represent.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. So it's a company I represent. The company is called Arias Agencies, but it branches off. So American Income is the parent company to it. So
it's kind of like broken
off. We had that conversation. Yeah. You said that it is the leading life insurance situation for Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah. So let me break it down to you. So Globe Life is like at the top.
Okay.
Okay. And then that's broken down to American Income. And then there's Arias Agencies, okay? And the branch that I work for is Arias Agencies out of Monroeville. There's multiple offices in the Pittsburgh area. There's one in the South Hills area, Wexford, and Monroeville. And then there's other offices all around the country. So, you know, we're always looking to, you know, bring in people that are, you know, hungry, motivated, and want to help other people. And, you know, it's a pretty awesome opportunity.
But, okay, so let's just start off with, like, the basics. Like, I know I have a child now. I need life insurance. Something real basic, whatever I need. Like, what do I need to do? You know, fill out paperwork, whatever we're doing. And then, like, if I have, like, how much would be the basic package just to do?
That's what I wanted to know, too, as well. It's
like is this 36 getting bucks a
into
month?
This life insurance situation, is it like, is it a situation where you have to have a set amount that you have to start off with? Or
Like, say I wanted only $10,000 to be my life insurance policy. So then I'll keep paying the kid. I'm like, I want 25. Could I just jump around like that?
Yeah. So the way that it's based off of is like, how much coverage do you want? Like, you know, how much money do you want to leave behind for your kids? You know, so let's just say that you want to say, I want to have the funeral paid for. That could be up to $30,000.
Okay.
So you want to have that taken care of. That's covered. Okay. Now, how much do you owe on your home? Oh, $70,000. Okay. So there's $100 right there. So that would make sense for you to get $100,000 worth of coverage.
So it'd be pay off.
Yeah. And the thing is with whole life is it's guaranteed to pay out at some time because it's the inevitable that we're all going to die, right?
Right.
So there's a 100% guarantee it's going to pay out. It's just a matter of when. And, you know, a lot of times people go, oh, well, I don't want to pay that much for that. But, you know, I mean, you got a nice pair of shoes on. I'm sure those aren't free.
Right. $1,000 Apple phone in your pocket. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is, you know, people have insurance on their car, their home, their iPhone. And if you ask somebody, like, if you dropped your iPhone right now and I spilled, let's just say I spilled water all over your iPhone accidentally.
Ain't gonna lie to me. I got a little nervous. I look for a cat.
Other than you beat me up, you know.
We just talked about you.
Well, the thing is that you're gonna go directly to Verizon or T-Mobile or whoever your phone carrier is, and you're going to go buy a brand new phone. And you don't care if it's $1,000, if it's $1,500, you're buying the phone and you're getting it today.
And on a side note with that, like, you actually pay for your phone through your bill, so you're kind of paying for your coverage, you know what I mean, whatever it would be. So
yeah.
So how much would a $100,000 policy cost?
Before we say that, the difference, like how you just said that just now, the difference to me in that situation is you're getting something back immediately. You're getting something tangible, something that you can hold right now.
Yeah.
It's hard for somebody to pay, like some regular person like me or anybody else that really doesn't have that extra
expendable
money to throw money at something and they don't see immediate results.
Well, and that's the thing is that, you know, it's just like working out. You know, you don't see the immediate results either, but it's consistency. Consistency of going back to the gym and doing the same thing over and over is ultimately going to get you the results that you want. So it's like putting money into a life insurance policy. So when you put money into a life insurance policy, yeah, you don't get something tangible in return. And, you know, I know you're putting, say, $100. If you're putting $100 into that policy, what happens is people are like, oh, I can't afford $100. But, okay, well, if you die, can your family afford $30,000?
Mm.
So
it's a different way of looking at it, you know?
Well, it's all about perception. Right. It's how you want to see it. So if you want to see it as in, like, this isn't an investment into myself, it is. It's an investment into yourself.
But how is it an investment? Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, so am I paying a bill to make sure that you guys get paid first, obviously, like the insurance company? But, like, is it putting it, like, into a pot or you're just keeping it?
So basically the way that I like to explain it is, like, so you have your bank account, okay? Right. And then you have a whole life policy. Okay. So with a bank account, you're not making any money off of that. There's no protection there. That money could go away, disappear. PNC Bank could say, hey, you know what? We just, whatever. Whatever happened, the money's gone. But what happens if you're not making money off of that, but the company barely, is. The like, PNC Bank is making
money.
Yeah,
they're loaning it out. They're loaning it out. And they're going to percentage back on right.
Exactly. So they're making money off of that. So what happens is if you put it into a whole life policy, it's going to grow between 4 and 4.5% every single year. Now, that's nothing crazy.
No, that's crazy. That's like
what grows? How much you've paid? Like if you have it for a year,
so how much
your bill's $100. So $1,200 is getting 4% interest on
for the year. Yep, right. Yep.
Not and the full $100,000.
And the thing is that you either get, like, let's say you have a $100,000 policy and you paid, you know, $20,000 into it. So you get either one or the other. So you get the whole life value of the $100,000, or you could pull out the cash value that it's worth, which, you know, a lot of people don't have the patience or, you know, the discipline to keep the money in there. So, I mean, I have people calling me sometimes like, oh, I've had my policy for two months now and I want to pull out the cash value. And it's like,
all right. And that's how people do with stocks, other things, you know what I mean? Yeah, lack of patience. Yeah.
So it's a long-term solution, not a short-term fix.
Okay. So back to the cost. How much would something like a $50,000 or $100,000, how much would that cost
monthly? It's going to vary off of each individual. So you're going to be different than Seth.
Yeah, so for an expensive. Look how red his face is.
So for an example, it's based
about
off
to tap right now.
it's based off of two things. So your age and also your health. Now, the way that I look at it is, like, you know, when you get somebody between 20 and 30, they normally don't want to spend that. Because why? Because they, you know, they want to buy Jordans. They want to go out to the South Side. They want to do the things that are fun. They want to waste their money. And then you look at somebody that's like between the ages of 30 and, you know, whatever that may be, just say 40. You know, people are having kids now and you got a mortgage, you're paying back college loans, you just recently got married, whatever the case may be. All these bills and all these different things are hitting you at one time. So now you can't afford it.
Right.
And then you get to the later stages, like when you're like, you know, 50, 60, 65 years old, and the benefits that you have through your job, they go away when you quit, get fired, or even if you retire. Mm-hmm. So they go away. And a lot of people don't know that. And what happens is when you get to
that's
that
what I was
going to
ask him too.
Yeah,
so I got life insurance through my job.
Through your job,
yeah, yeah.
So I don't know, what's the difference?
So should you take it outside the job? Like, so say if he got laid off.
Yeah, like, so your benefits are going to go away.
They go away immediately because I never tapped into it, but I know I have a certain kind of.
But all of it?
I think it's like 50,000. I think it's like 50,000, but I never tapped in. They just said, "Hey, yo, you got a $50,000 life insurance policy."
So if he died today, and he still was employed by that job, they would have to pay that $50,000 that he was paying into. But say he got laid off last week, falls on his steps.
Yeah,
they don't have to pay nothing.
No.
Even because they were taken out of his check though.
So I'm only
you're not
so
with the company anymore.
So, that sounds crazy. So if I leave the company, all that goes.
It all goes.
I can't take that. I can't take that into like I can't take that and put it into somebody else's. Like I can't just go to like you and be like, hey, here goes.
That's not even a life insurance policy.
Yeah, that's a work insurance policy.
That's a work insurance.
Man,
that's
fine. Not,
yeah. So the
this
thing
whole time
is
I was
that,
like, oh yeah, I'm cool.
Yeah, I thought the same thing.
And the thing is, there's two different types of insurance. So there's term, and then there's whole. Okay. Term is like short for terminate, so meaning it goes away. So what happens is, you know, they'll get you it. Say 20 years old, and they'll say, we'll sign you to a 30-year contract or whatever, you know, and you're going to pay $40 a month. And then they give you, like, some astronomical number, you know, as long as you pass the underwriting process. Like, you're healthy, you got good medical records and so forth.
$400,000.
You're not doing anything crazy like skydiving, scuba diving, anything crazy, you know. So you're less likely. They're betting that you're going to live for a while, right?
And pay them.
So that term gets put into, you know, a policy like a company like State Farm, you know, one of the more recognizable companies out there. And what happens is, you know, you make $60, you put your $60 into that and you just continuously pay it for years upon years upon years. And then it goes up, you know, periodically. As it goes up, you know, as the cost of that goes up, what happens is
the cost goes up or the amount goes up. And as the amount goes up, the cost goes up.
The cost goes up. The amount stays the same. The cost goes up.
So if I got $300,000, I'm starting off with 40 or I start off with 60 and then it keeps going up.
So you have to go back through the underwriting process again. And then.
So every time you get older and you get more withered, they put you back through it.
And it's more expensive.
And it gets more expensive.
So what happens is with a whole life policy, like if you get in at 30 years old and you have $100,000 worth of coverage, and it's $100 a month, you're going to pay that $100 and. It's never going to change. That price doesn't change.
Okay.
So you're saying the best thing to do whole.
For whole life, yeah.
Okay.
But now there are some catches to that too, because there are some companies that have universal whole and also variable whole, and both of those fall underneath of the umbrella of term, which people don't know that. So like when you talk to people.
Damn.
So people need to make sure that they look for whole life.
So they need to make sure that it's just whole, like straight whole. Now the thing is that term is a lot cheaper. And the way that, at least in my own personal opinion, they'll say, oh, you can get $30 or $40, and you'll get $500,000 worth of coverage. You know, because I talk to these people and they think that they got it all figured out. Like, oh, I'm good. I got $500,000 worth of coverage. But they don't realize that cost is going to keep going up. And what happens is when you get to that age between 60, 65, whenever you start to have some different conditions, like health conditions, like
it goes
whether it's
up,
high blood pressure,
and then
diabetes,
you can't work.
That's one of those things now. Can you ever switch it over to whole?
So you can switch it to whole, but remember, it's based off of two things.
Your age and your health.
So if you don't lock it in when you're 20, you know, there's 20-year-old rates, then there's smoker rates. So if you're 20 years old and you don't smoke, and then you get to 60, you know, when you retire, you're like, oh, I'm retired, I'm good, I have everything all figured out, well, your benefits go away. And then you try to get into a policy because the term goes away. You get into a whole life policy. I mean, and it could be anywhere.
And this is the, I want to ask you a
grab
question.
Grab that clock real quick.
This is, you know, brother to brother on a podcast. My mom, she has diabetes now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really sure if she has life insurance for someone like, you know, I'm going through that now.
And how old is
someone? She is 50. She's 52 or 53.
Yeah.
What would you recommend?
And she's still
the
a crib.
Route. The she's a crib. She crips it out. What would you recommend her route? Going forward, like
say she just wanted to pay for a funeral, just make sure she had something to just throw back.
The first question that I would ask her, does she want to do an earth burial or does she want to do cremation? Because they're two different costs.
Me knowing my mom, I'm assuming earth.
Okay. So I would have up to $30,000 worth of coverage for that.
Because
that has
inflation
built into it.
Okay.
You know? And it can be expensive. I mean, and it depends on what you want. So if there's a $30,000 window, you know, you can take $10,000 of it and say, hey, you know what, we're going to go ahead and get her cremated. If she says like that's okay, obviously, you know. So and there's $20,000 that's left over. Now the unique thing about
you said the rates are higher the older they are in the health, right?
Older that you get, yep, and then you get rated. So the way that I like to explain it is like kind of like your driver's license. Like you have a clean record, right? You're driving down the highway, you're going 100 miles an hour. Well, you get pulled over. You're going whatever.
You just said 100.
Was. Yeah, 100. There you go. So you get rated. You know, like that's what happens to your driver's license. Like they're like, oh, okay, well, you know what? Now you were speeding here. Now your insurance goes up, right? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of the same thing, but from a healthcare perspective. So if you have diabetes, they're going to rate
health.
You. Right. If you have
my high health blood is, pressure, my health is speeding up.
It's going to be more. Right. If you have cancer or, you know, something that's like life-threatening, then you won't even qualify. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's important to lock it in at a young age. And people that are younger, you know, they just don't, they're not thinking about that.
Not thinking about it at all.
You know, at all.
Now, before we get to the other benefits,
you think people aren't thinking about it, or people aren't financially stable enough to make those type of decisions? Because I would say to myself, I've thought about it a bunch of times.
Yeah, but I've never.
I'm more of a day-to-day living kind of person. I don't have the funds on a certain kind of level to be able to. I probably could. I mean, I make enough money to be able to do it. But just discipline yourself on a certain kind of level. But I think most people are in situations where they don't have those kind of funds to think beyond day to day.
Yeah. I mean, and that's, you know, that comes down to everybody's personal financial situation. But the way that I look at it is like, I mean, if you're hungry, you're going to find a way to eat, right? So what's important?
Did we just start?
it just comes down to like literally what's important to you. You know, when Black Friday comes around, people are always looking for discounts. And there's, you know, if they want some new shoes or something, oh, they're $600 off.
Yeah.
Well, you know, are they $600 off or are they still $200 coming out of your pocket? You know, so you pay the $200, you're like, but I saved $600. You know, at the end of the day, people have money to do the things that they want, but they don't have the money to do the things that they need. So it comes down to, you know, your decision making. And when you make good decisions at a young age, you don't get whacked over the head at 60 or 65 with a $300, a $400, you know, rate. So
it's basically trying to get into the, what you say, the whole and not the term, basically.
Yeah.
And not trying to get swindled by the universal or whatever. So the fine.
And a lot of people don't think about when they die because people don't give a damn.
No, because when I die.
Most people don't. I would say this.
The trash comes out on Tuesday mornings.
Most people do not care when they die. They don't have any debt anymore. That's a real thing.
Yeah, but that, it is a real thing.
That's a terrible way to go about it. But
your debt just doesn't disappear.
It doesn't disappear.
It gets passed on. So there's people that'll say like, oh, I have a home. It's worth $500,000. I'm going to pass that on. Well, do you plan on dying today? There's a thing called depreciation. It's going to be worth less in 10, 20 years from now.
Who? The house?
Or home.
No, it's going to appreciate.
You think it's going to be worth more?
Yeah.
It depends.
I say my house literally is worth depends. Way more.
If somebody's 30 years old and a home's there around for 20, 30 years, you know, like I said, for 30, 40 years old. Like,
oh, yeah, because my shit's up.
A lot of people's places are down.
But the thing is, though, is people think that they're going to pass that on to their loved ones. But whenever that transfers to somebody else, it gets taxed. So that's what people don't understand. A whole life policy, like if you die and you have $100,000 and you want to leave it behind for your daughter, let's just say you have a daughter.
It'll take care of that, though.
It's $100,000 tax-free.
And then it'll take care of whatever debt you had or whatever?
It can be used however whoever the beneficiary was.
Oh, so it just comes straight to them.
They can't garnish the wages or anything like that.
Because
it's 100% tax-free, and whoever the beneficiary is, they have the right to do whatever they want with that money.
I know
but if you have a home, you know, that gets taxed before it gets passed to whoever that person would be.
A deed transfer and everything like that. Yeah. Okay, I see what you're saying.
See what I mean?
Okay, so initially people want to look for whole insurance and stay away from everything else.
Whole life specifically.
Whole life specifically. Whenever they go into it, do you have to, like, when they go to check out your health, are they looking for PCP? Like, how are they checking that? Do you have to go see a doctor? Like,
so
do they set up their own?
Yeah, so you have.
See, seems like I'm sorry to get set up.
You've had to see a physician within the past 5 years because they're going to go through the underwriting process, and the underwriting process
does they check chlamydia your count?
because a lot of times, you know, there's a question.
Does chlamydia count?
You're not going to be able to get one.
Disqualified.
Click, shorty.
You're definitely not going to be able to get. Well, no, you don't get no ass.
Yeah, but I'm about to somehow end up with, but I'm about to go smack some Newports as soon as we're done here. So I know I'm not going to get it.
You know what that, I mean? That's what I'm problem. Hey, I smoke too many cigars.
But we're not even into that. But besides that, but like, okay, they may have a doctor check you out, like their own doctor, their own personal.
So whoever your doctor is, like if you got Dr. Smith, you know, here in Beaver Falls, like, you know, you'll go through the underwriting process. And on the application, we fill out, you know, all the information, like your height, your weight, your medications, your tobacco user, non-tobacco user, who your physician is. And so, then it has to go through the underwriting process.
So you guys send them the application. They fill it out as needed. And
right now in the world that we're living in, like most people don't want people in their homes due to COVID and so forth. Mm-hmm. So we've been able to take advantage of technology. So we're using Zoom. That's how we're conducting most of our appointments. But every once in a while, you know, you get somebody that, you know, they don't have email. They don't have internet. They prefer a face-to-face conversation.
Fun fact, we beat COVID. We're in Ukraine now.
So, you know, those are the different options that are available, you know, being able to, you know, sit down with an agent and get locked in on
that. But you guys are going to take their like financial records and everything like this and see, like, what they can afford. Like, this is, like, it's not, like, just an easy process to be like, oh, I could afford this. I'm like, well, what can you really afford?
Right.
You know what I mean? So,
well, and that's a conversation that has to be had. You know, yeah. You don't want to get somebody – you don't want to put somebody in life insurance debt. It's not like, you know, hey, go get $250,000 a whole life. It's going to be pretty expensive, you know. But there's some people that are okay with that. You know, I speak to people that make millions of dollars, and I speak to people that live check to check. But at the end of the day, you know, a lot of the people that are wealthy – you know, they do understand and they know, put your money into a whole life policy, because if you want to leave that money behind, it's 100% tax free.
Right,
because and it's going to go to whoever, you know, you want that money to
and
go that, to.
And your life insurance policy, whatever the amount it is, like you said, whenever it transfers like their property or their assets over and that tax comes out, that life insurance will pay for that basically what was supposed to. This is from what I've
it could
my research.
It could. So if I leave you $100,000 behind, mm-hmm. you can take that $100,000 and use it for whatever you want to use it for, because you're the beneficiary.
Yeah. Just on a personal note, like my mother for years, like it was always like financially, we were always helping her, And it was like, man, what's going on? Always trying to get her to invest and think in different ways so that, you know, she could be financially stable. And then she passed away. And, you know, we got this letter out of nowhere. She had it taken out of life insurance policy for us. And it was honestly a game changer for all three of us.
Yeah.
I would put the number out there, but I don't want to put my brother and sister's business out
You
there.
Think these mics is cheap?
But it was a game. It was a huge game changer. So all this time we thought we're taking care of our mother, but when she passed, she dropped a lump sum to us. And it was tax-free.
Yep.
It was this. We paid for the burial stuff and boom. And
it's up. At the same time, we always know somebody who had a life insurance policy and then they get into some health issues. Now they're not making the payments. Then all of a sudden they're like this. They're like, we out of here.
So actually, that's one thing we said. Can you back out of a payment while being on a policy?
What do you mean back out?
When I say this, I'm saying like, say I'm having a down month.
I mean, I need some help this month. Can I get back to y'all next month?
Yeah, can I get back to you? Like, are you able to be like, just be like, hey, yo, I can't pay this month?
Nah, that's
once
not.
You're locked in, you're locked in.
Once you're locked in, you're locked in. It's a commitment, you know? I mean, it's, you know.
But what if I get sick and I'm in the hospital? And then,
no, like, I'm just asking those basic questions. Like, yeah, you know.
You can get different things into, you know, it's called the waiver of premium. So, you know, with the waiver of premium is basically, if something, like let's say you got into a car wreck and you were in a coma and you were unable to talk, not responsive.
It can't work.
So basically, if you have that waiver premium, and it's only a couple dollars, you know, added to the premium per month. So what happens is, if something happens to you and you have that on there, then you don't have to make the payments on the policy. And you still keep it 100%. But if you don't put that on there and then you miss the payment,
it goes away.
Then it lapses and it goes
away. Then it lapses. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and it's important to have these conversations too with your loved ones, because, you know, I know a lot of people don't like to talk about death and so forth, but you were fortunate because you said it showed up out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm. Right? My dad said that to me one day. He's like, oh, yeah, man, we got this policy, man. You're going to be set up this way. I'm just like, man.
Through work?
My dad, no.
No, I'm just asking because that shit blew my mind. I was like, oh, I thought they had to spend the bread.
I thought so too. But my dad has a real life insurance policy. And, you know, just talking about death and all that kind of stuff is just, you know, a terrible thing to go through. But, you know, he's on that, you know, he's been in the work field for a long time, been around a lot of people. So he's learned, prepared. Yeah, he's learned from a lot of different kind of people, and he let me know, like, hey, just know that if this happens, you're going to be all right on this end. And I'm just like, man, nobody want
to
talk about
nobody
that.
Wants to talk about it, but nobody. It's a good conversation to have.
It is, it is.
The first thing, nobody wants to talk about death, but the very first thing that happens is if you, like, let's say that your father passed away today. The very first thing that you're going to ask is,
well, how are we going to take care of this?
Do you have a life insurance policy?
Yeah, right. You know, right.
How you taking care of
it? And the thing is like, when the person's gone, they can't say, hey, I put it upstairs in the cabinet. Or, you know, it's good to know where the.
But not even how, not even how you taking care of us is, don't hurt me on a level. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's so many people that die all the time, and the family members have to pay for the funeral.
Yeah,
no, it happens all the time.
Every time I see those GoFundMes, I'm like, man, you guys are.
I'm like, man, like, don't die, and then now my pockets is like, I gotta take care of everything that you got going on because you passed.
It's life insurance is designed to, you know, leave money behind for your loved ones, because if it were for you, it'd be called death insurance. Right, so it's called life insurance. So you want to leave a portion of money behind for your loved one,
and it's really a way to build generational wealth.
It really is.
You feel what I'm saying? Like, you could literally
can I take a policy out on him?
You could set up the next generation to have investment money. That's exactly what happened in our situation. My life has changed after that. Of course, I'd rather my mom be here, but my life changed after that. I was able to. I've been looking into real estate for years. I was able to make a move.
Right.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Set yourself up to your family.
Yeah. So as far as the investment side, I'd like to talk about.
I would love to know how long your mom had her insurance policy.
I would too.
I would love to know that.
I would too, because she had cancer. Hey, so it's like, well,
that's a home.
Like, did you cancel things out?
Did you get it before the cancer? Like, how did it actually work out?
Probably.
I'd love to hear. Well, my mom beat cancer before she got cancer again. So I wonder, after she beat it the first time, was she like, you know what? Let me
go get checked and get it.
What type of cancer did she have?
Breast.
Okay. Yeah, so there's different stipulations and so forth, you know, with different, you know, disease states and so forth. You know, I don't have them all down to a T or anything like that, but I do know that if it's if it's past 2 years and everything has been removed, then I do believe that they are able to qualify in certain aspects.
But if it's terminal, it's pretty much a wrap. I mean, nobody's going to walk in there like.
If it's term, you know, I mean.
That Loyola lady that blesses the team, she can't get life insurance right now.
Not a chance.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? I thought she died in the stands.
On the investing side of things, I'd love to talk, because I seen on TikTok the other day, a guy was talking about how, you know, if you start off early and you build up this account, how you can basically be your own bank.
Right, borrow against yourself and pay yourself back.
Yep. And I always try to speak to people in terms of only use it to invest, because I know people going to buy cars. Yeah. They might even update their house. I think that you should only use it for investing. But can we talk about that process of being
able to... You know, that's not realistic.
Being able to pull it out. Most people who have insurance are already thinking that way. So that's normally how they're using it. You feel what I'm saying?
I hope.
Those who aren't thinking long term probably aren't even getting insurance.
My daddy died. I went and bought a chain.
No. So can we talk about that process and how that... It's called infinite banking? Is that what it's called or something like
not
that?
Not 100%.
No. I know what term you're thinking of.
It's called... Something like that. Something.
But you're basically borrowing against yourself.
Yeah. So basically, you can borrow. You can borrow the cash value of the loan. So if you have a policy, let's say it's $100,000. You know, you can borrow against that at a certain point, and then you have to pay it back within a certain time frame as well.
Are you borrowing what you've paid in, or are you borrowing against $100,000?
You can't borrow against $100,000. Okay. $100,000 is concrete, and it's in there.
Okay.
So if that were the case, everybody.
So if I paid
$20,000,
right.
Big time.
Yeah, okay, so say it's $100,000. I already put $20,000. I could borrow $15,000 and pay myself back.
So you can borrow X amount of dollars, but it has to be paid back within X amount of time.
Yeah. So, but just like a mortgage,
but you don't have to pay interest on it or anything like that.
That's what I'm saying.
That's a great thing.
So, and you're paying yourself. Essentially.
Yep. That's fire.
Yeah.
That is fire, especially if you start
take one out now.
Early.
Believe it or not, it actually really helped me, because I was in the healthcare industry for 10 years, and I got laid off. And, you know, I am a little bit of a saver, so, you know, I put some money aside. And
not I, friend.
Just being young, when I was 26 years old, I started putting in like $50, because that's what I could afford at the time. And then, you know, I got a pay raise, and instead of me going out and buying, you know, something
extra
that I probably
stuff.
Didn't need. You know, I told my financial advisor, I said, hey, man, look, like I got a pay raise and I wanted to ask you, like, what I should do. He's like, well, I would up your policy. And I'm like, okay, cool. So I put more money into it. And I put away $400 per month for one, and I put stuff away for my kids as well.
Mm-hmm.
And
how many kids you got?
Two.
My guy. No, I was just asking.
And
everybody got two kids all of a sudden. Ain't this a bitch? I ain't got none.
With that being said, when I got laid off, you know, during the whole COVID era, I didn't have to rush to find a job because, for one, I had a business opened up, Grind, the MMA brand that I have. And then I also was able to borrow some money from my life insurance policy. And I didn't have to pay it back. I didn't have to pay that back because it's set up a certain way through my financial advisor that there's X amount of dollars in there that I could pull out and not have to pay that back and still be able to keep my policy. Like, he put it in, he diversified my policy for me, you know?
Okay.
So.
Oh, there's levels to this.
You know, putting it in different places to where there's money that can't be touched.
There's an A and B podcast.
So there's, I guess, I don't know if it was diversified my situation with my 401k, but I definitely tapped in. So I just bought a house and I tapped into my 401k.
You get penalized pretty big for that.
I didn't. Too. Not at all. Not at all. There was a certain
during COVID, wasn't it? Something where you could use the money during COVID?
So yeah. there was a certain situation where I could borrow money from my policy or whatever you would call it. Took money from that and I never got penalized on it.
Yeah.
So that's, you know.
That's a high tax if you take it out early. It's like 7%.
Yeah, because you can't.
That's a lot.
I made the mistake with my first pharmaceutical company.
Drug dealer.
They gave me I had a 401k and I was trying to put as much as I could into it. And, you know, and I was young and didn't know what I was doing. And, you know, I didn't have anybody at the time mentoring me or telling me what to do. And they called me and they go, hey, do you want a check or you want to just roll this over? And I was like, send me the check. And they sent me the check, but it gets taxed.
Yeah, crazy.
So I ended up losing like half of the 401k. Right.
Is it like federal, state, and how they tax you too?
I'm not exactly
like,
sure.
I swear it's like a
50. It was like 50%.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Like, I mean, I think I had like maybe like $10,000 in there or something like that. And literally it was like five.
That's wild, man. That's really crazy. Wild. It's really what you put in because they probably matched you.
Yeah.
So everything you put in is what you got.
So how many zips did you buy?
so we got 5 minutes left. Anything else is on the lines of insurance that or anything that you want to talk about or want to say?
You said Grind. Are you still messing with Grind? Is that still promoting or what we doing? Because we can cut this out. I just want to put out there real quick.
Yeah.
Can this get you bread? If you know what I mean? Can we get you into an ad campaign where you can put it on this podcast? You know what I'm saying? Like whether it be your business or whoever you're with, Aries, or you know what I mean? But I'm just saying, like, whatever you can do, we're going to try to spin you too. All right? Yeah.
No, I
somebody, really don't, somebody off this is going to fuck with you.
Somebody's going to, oh, yeah, probably.
Somebody, I don't know. In a good way, man.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, somebody's going to be like, I'm serious about this.
I'm going to walk on, get beat up. That's what I thought. You know? But no, I really don't do Grind anymore. You know,
okay.
I've kind of figured out that, you know, I need to give my full time and attention to the life insurance thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much information to learn. And, you know, I'm fully dedicated to that. So, you know, I do get some fighters and so forth that reach out from time to time and they still want like shorts or, you know, maybe like some rash guards, like a little compression shirt you wear and so forth. But, you know, I'm not really trying to do anything with it. I had a pretty good run with it though, man. I was in some.
Who owns that brand then? What are we talking about?
I still own it, but I'm
so
really
then,
why not. Aren't
you, so then, bro, if you get bread off of it, man, promote that thing, man.
Well,
it's like the compression shirts and
people. I 1000% agree with Joe.
Yeah, what are you doing? Don't say no shit like that. Don't do that.
Especially
if you get paid off.
If you're involved,
out of war grind
with working out, doing MMA,
choking motherfuckers on a daily, yeah.
Bad beating some people up. Like,
what is you doing? You should have been. See, we done fucked up.
And I looked at your Instagram, bruh. We can work.
Maybe down the road, you know.
Listen, I saw on Instagram. I was like, bruh.
No, anything
you could be popping.
Probably.
You got abs and you're like 40.
You can't chase two rabbits, man.
No, but you can, though.
Why not?
Seasons.
But you can get us to taste it. Bro, what I'm trying to tell you, there's a bunch of motherfuckers that's going to be at the bar that think they're about to work out at the top of every year. They're going to be like, grind.
To be honest with you, like, I started Grind. I really didn't start it to be a brand or anything like that. I more so just got it for myself.
Okay.
And I started Grind because I wanted to get something that like represented me, like something that I wanted to go after, you know. And I mean, I was never like lazy or anything like that. I was always like pretty like dedicated and like motivated to like be better. But I wanted something that I could just kind of like have stuck in my head. Like, man, whenever something gets tough, it's like, you got to grind. You got to go get it. You know,
G-R-Y-N-D,
so,
right?
And the why, you know, that represents like, what's your why?
Yeah, what's your why?
What's your reason to stay on your grind? Because you're definitely going to come across something difficult. And jiu-jitsu is like the definition of difficult, you know, because you're always going against somebody that's bigger, always somebody that's better, always somebody that's more technical. And I wanted to put myself into a position to, you know, have something that I could represent. And go out there and, you know, I didn't really put a lot of information out there as to like what it represented. And I didn't even really expect it to take off. Next thing you know, I got like gyms calling me. I got different individuals calling me. And it started to take off, but, you know.
Yeah, I feel you in a sense of, you know, you can't chase two rabbits, but I believe that there's a season for everything. And it seems like right now the season that you're in is focused on life insurance.
For sure.
But there may be an opportunity or a time where you come back to grind, even if it's in a sense where you're hiring someone to run it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And you're just making sure that the vision and the brand is what it is.
Yeah.
But
if it's yours,
you don't have to so much.
You done wasted all this time talking about somebody else's money, man.
You don't have to so much throw away and
you got an LLC with grind?
Got an LLC.
Man, this motherfucker done. Cause when he told me he's done messing with grind no more, I'm like, oh, that's not his joint. And then he just said, oh, I'm curious, there's two rabbits. That's your rabbit, my guy. That's somebody else's rabbit. Now, that rabbit's paying more right now, but that's your rabbit.
This is more down my alley. What I've learned about myself is that I work better, kind of like I told you guys with sports, I work better in a team atmosphere.
Okay.
You know, we get that.
I'm not the guy that wants to be.
But don't lose your focus.
No, I'm keeping my focus.
Okay.
I'm focusing on what I feel, you know, I need to focus on and being able to help other people, because to get to where I want to go, I can help other people get to where they want to go. And with grind, you know, it's a brand and it does mean something to me, but clothing really isn't what I do. You know, it's just kind of something that I kind of.
Would you be open to partnering with someone? If there was someone else out there that was like, yo, you've already built this.
You built a brand.
Absolutely.
Like,
yeah.
I'll run it. You might as well just stop it. I'll run it. And it's you know what I mean? We'll just meet once a month and make sure that it still aligns with yours, and we just keep grind moving. Would you be into that?
Yeah, I mean, maybe down the road. You know, right now, I kind of, like I said.
But don't let the fire go out, man.
I'm just inspiring somebody out there who's like, yo, I like grind.
I'm still doing jiu-jitsu, so that fire keeps burning. You know, so grind is a jiu-jitsu brand,
Keep promoing, though. You know what I'm saying?
I just keep training, man. That's all. All right.
Keep the shit up.
Hey, yo, we like to end all podcasts with asking how many bodies you got.
No.
Edit that.
I was like this. I was like, how do we? I was like, I know we ain't about to make a freestyle.
110.
And then you see me freestyle. I was like,
so what is it?
No, you're good. I think speaking about mindset is probably one of the most important things. You know, I know you said if there's anything I wanted to talk about, I think mindset. And, you know, personally, in my own opinion, I believe that, you know, like, it's not that I don't believe in school or anything like that. I think school's good, but I think it's only good for certain people, you know, because, you know, when you sit back and you really analyze school, it's like you go, what time you got to be there? 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning. What time you get done? 2 or 3. What time's work start? 7, 8 o'clock in the morning. What time's work get done? 3 or 5. And it's like,
and what are they really teaching you?
Yeah. And we get programmed from a young age to do so many things that other people are telling us to do. And the thing is, the people that are teaching are being told what to do by somebody else is being told what to do.
Like the state and whatnot.
Yeah, and then like whenever you get out here in the real world and you got to figure things out, it's like, man, like this is kind of crazy. So like for me personally, I was just telling my mom about the Biggie Smalls movie Notorious. You know? I'm sure you guys all watch it.
Yeah,
it's terrible. Kind of funny because I can't remember exactly what the quote or what he said.
Hey, Ma, I got to get out here and get it.
No, but he said something like, so he's talking to his math teacher. His math teacher's like, you ain't going to be nothing when you grow up.
Oh, when he goes up to the board.
And he goes up to the chalkboard. He told me I was going to be a trash man, right? He's like, oh, I did some math. He was like, I did the math and a trash man makes $50,000 a year. And I found out a teacher only makes $40,000 a year. I'm going to make $10,000 more a year than your dumb ass. That's what he said.
I hit him with the chalk.
Hey, fun fact, that happened to me at YSU practice. He was like, you know what, Seth Job, sometimes I see you. Sometimes I do. You know what you're going to do? You'll be sweeping streets in Beaver Falls. And I was like, oh, shit, the coach knows who I am.
You kind of do look like a street sweeper, though, for real.
Guess what? Hey, yo, I went home at the time, and I said.
He can't laugh.
I was outside. I asked the street sweeper, I said, how much you make an hour? He said at the time, he said, I make $18 an hour. I said, just doing this, just driving around. And at the time, that's like early 2000s. I was like, $18 an hour? I was like, boy, my mom's making like $11,000 a year. I'm balling on that hoe. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
It's all perspective.
But I think growing up, though, like, you know, a lot of teachers, you know, you, at least for me personally, because, like, I would look at teachers like, oh, they got all the answers, you know, and they would say, like, oh, well, you don't know that math problem or you don't know that social studies. And I realized, like, I think one of the most important things to life is learning how you learn. And I realized that, you know, I don't learn from, like, you telling it and then me remembering it. I have to do something repetitively.
Right, me too.
I have to do this.
I didn't really start learning until YouTube and Google came around.
Yeah.
Because I was able to study myself, apply, learn, fail.
Yep. Yep. You know, and that's the process to anything. You gotta go through the growing pains of it. And I could just never bring myself to school and be like, yo, I'm excited about this.
Yeah.
Like, and if I'm not interested in something, like my
except for the shorties.
That was the best thing about school.
Right, that's the only reason why you got up, because you knew all the girls was going to school. Mm-hmm. The guys that was like,
the calf is gonna be crazy.
Right. Bars was
the
gonna
social
be
interaction. Late. I would have stood in line outside of Beer Falls and showed my ID and paid every day.
And been like, getting in the club.
That's how
all your friends are there.
That's how much fun it was.
Yeah.
As far as the school aspect, I was never excited because I didn't feel like it was for me.
Yeah.
I wasn't didn't feel like I was really learning anything
choice.
About
you. Don't have a choice though, at all. So you have to go.
But I don't think any of us went to class and was like, I'm gonna learn this today,
Mr. Deep.
You just kind of did it.
We had one class with a guy named Mr. Deep where he was teaching us about investment.
Yeah.
Where we were doing the stock market, we were just talking about profit.
That was Booth.
No,
for
it was
us
deep.
It was Mr. Deep.
Okay,
so
he was
that retired. Was one class I was excited about. Also, a writing class with I think it was Ms. Goss, maybe. But that was it. Other than that, that whole process never interested me. It never.
Yeah.
I can't say
just
it did.
Bandanas
if I'm not,
and bandanas.
If I'm not interested in something, I can't even pretend.
Right.
Like, you know, and even whenever I am interested in something, I have to do it over and over and over. Like, if I listen to an audiobook, I listen to it for like a month. Wow. You know, and then all of a sudden, like one day.
Because it's a different, because you hear a different
clicks.
Line.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, the company that I'm with now, they always say note takers are money makers. So, like, someone's talking, take notes. You know, so, like, I literally, you know, I'm a work in progress. It's something I'm still working on getting better at, but I was never a note taker. And when I would try to take notes, I couldn't write fast enough to keep up. I'm like, what did they just say? And I forget. I miss.
And then you would miss whatever like, the next point was.
I'm not gonna write that. I'm done. Like, I only got a sentence in here. So
yeah. Yeah, when I went back to school to finish my degree up IUP, that's when it was like, okay, well, YouTube's, Google's, all at this height. I was actually a good student.
Because
I was able to go practice. I was able to go look this up because I went to go finish my economics degree. Nothing that I care about.
Yeah.
So I had to re-tap back in, but I was able to get A's at that point, whereas I'd never been an A student.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I was actually able to do that. You know what I'm saying?
Everybody is an A student. It's just what is it that you want to be an A student in?
Right. And how do you even
that's
know?
Good. That's a good perspective.
But because you got to figure that out.
But like that's nobody knows, though. Like I said, like, okay, you went to college.
He went to college.
I went to college.
That's why you gotta do different things.
Yeah, he went to. But like, what I'm saying
he tried to downplay my college because I played baseball.
No, crazy. That was swinging a miss. Is what I'm saying. Though. Nowhere.
At Geneva. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyways, but what I'm saying is nobody here went to college, and nobody like one of our parents was like they always said go to college, but nobody said for what. Right. Nobody said be an engineer, be a lawyer.
We were lab rats.
That's what I'm saying.
Because nobody.
I got a business degree, and I still have no idea what we're talking about.
Our parents' generation felt yo. If you go to college, you become successful. That was there. If I could go back, I'd go to college. Now
but
we
it still
know.
Doesn't make, now we know that's fuck shit.
But if you look at it, like, you know, you got a business teacher teaching business. And if you ask the teacher, like, well, what business do you run?
Right.
Like, oh, I don't run business. I just teach it.
This
well,
is
how
my
can
business.
You teach something that you don't know?
I agree.
And you can. You can. But there's some people who are so book that they really can't, because you don't have to be a great football player to be able to coach or teach.
Okay.
As long as you have the insight. There's some teachers that are so wrapped up in the books that they can't do insight. Same thing with doctors. Yeah. Like my sister's a great therapist because she's been a therapist her whole life.
Yeah.
She has the insight. But there's someone who's going through therapy school just, okay, the teacher said this, the book said this, they're never going to get through to any of their clients. Yeah. You know
what
I'm saying?
I feel like with your kids, you ain't going to respect no coaches that wasn't good in sports.
You mean me personally?
You personally.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
I can see it. I can see it. I can see it. Him, yeah. I can see it. I can see it right now. After having this conversation, he's not going to respect any coaches. And that's terrible because I know so many good athletes that are terrible coaches.
No, they usually are terrible coaches.
Terrible coaches.
Because you can be so good. Frustrated. Like, just
do it. It's like, just do it. Just do it.
Yeah. Just do it. Just be good on it.
Just jump the highest I did.
Just because. Run as fast as I did. Yeah. Everyone doesn't have that same athletic ability as that man.
I need to put you in position.
Yeah.
To make like, these
to
plays.
Be able to this coach, it, to be able to coach the sport is totally different than being good at a sport.
I feel like we're still taking shots.
The thing is, though, is that I think that. From my own personal opinion, you know, like I like to think I'm a pretty good athlete, but the thing is, like, if I'm going to sit there and I'm going to watch the kids' sports, I can't come on game day and critique everything they're doing on game day. If I want to be a part of that,
right?
I know so much. I didn't show up to practice.
They give the time in. They gave up their time. That's exactly where I came from. Shut the fuck up. If you don't like it, get involved.
I tried to sit back for a long period of time, and then I saw people coaching a certain kind of way.
They were just kind of like, we're going to play the way I want to play, and then fuck these kids over without giving
right.
them the
not,
base.
Not even really knowing. They don't know. They just think they want to win. They just want to win.
Well, the issue that I have with that is that, you know, a lot of what I see personally is a lot of people that, you know, weren't good at sports demand success from their kids. And they, like, how can you demand something from your kid that you can't even do?
You can.
I get that, though.
No. You can demand a certain kind of thing once you learn.
I want commitment.
Because everyone learns. I think it's a process that you go through in life. Your grandparents had a certain kind of knowledge. Once they got that certain kind of knowledge, they used that knowledge that they got, and they built off of that, gave it to their kids. And then
tried to give it to them earlier than when they got it.
So on and so forth. But here's Like, my parents didn't graduate from college. So their whole goal was to get their kid to college.
Yeah.
They got their kid to college, but I didn't graduate. I now have that formula in my head to now get him to graduate.
But don't criminal justice. You know what
I
mean?
Like,
you can be a cop tomorrow.
Now I know. I feel like you can demand more because you know your mistakes and everything that you messed up along the way
I'll give you an example of what I mean, though. Okay, so like there's a YouTube video and you can probably find it. There's a guy that, you know, he's critiquing his son in the batting cage. And the dad yelling like, hit the ball, put your left foot forward, pivot, do this. Like, he's giving all these instructions. And finally the coach said, you know what? Hey dad, I want you to go in there and I want you to do it. I want you to show him how it's done. And he couldn't hit the ball.
Mm. So, now, see, I get that situation because I see parents do that all the time where they'll have their kids at the court and you can tell they don't even know no drills.
Yeah.
They're just like, shoot it, make it. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I get that. Like, yeah.
But I'm there on the field with my kid.
Right. And
like, yeah, we're there. Like, hey, yo, we gonna run together. We're going to hit balls together. Yeah. We're going to do all that together. Yeah.
I think if you're going to demand it, you need to become a part of the insight where you can actually teach them.
But you I don't know feel what I'm like saying? If you haven't been through that adversity, I don't feel you have the credentials to talk about that.
Maybe not. Certain things. There's certain areas you can't go to. We talked about it with sports last time. If we're in a playoff series, you'd be like, guys, this is what you got to do in the playoffs. You can't talk about it if you've never been in a playoff.
I love this talk.
But I do believe that you can study it.
But, like, okay, say so they play.
But you can learn it. You can teach it if you study it.
You're 165.
What are real credentials, though? Like,
if you can't do it, you can't teach me how to do it.
Okay, Belichick, get him out of here.
So that's what
get
I
out.
No, 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 no.
You might have some insights to teach, though.
We'll talk about what's his name, Freddie Roach? His name Freddie Roach?
I swear to God, if you start twitching and shit.
Pacquiao, you know what I'm saying? Like, who? Yeah. The white dude.
He got
white
dude. Cerebral palsy or
There's
whatever.
There's no way in the world that man can box. But he's considered one of the best boxing trainers there is.
Right, because he got the knowledge. That's what I'm saying.
He has the knowledge.
The Bill Belichick of boxing.
He don't have the ability to do it.
Some people are good teachers. And if you're a good teacher and you actually have the insight, you're good. Because I'm not a millionaire successful yet, but I could guide somebody on how to build their business and help it scale. Yeah. Because I understand how to scale. You know what I mean? And I'm not there yet. I'm on my way. Yeah, but I can help you scale your business and brand yourself. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, so I mean, I'm not saying that like, you know, that's not necessarily true like in all situations. Like there are some people that are born to be coaches, you know, but they can't perfect like the, you know, dip in, dip out in a football, you know.
Right.
But what you're saying is it means more, especially when you're a youth and like.
What I'm saying is the barking dad that's on the sideline saying, toughen up, Johnny, run harder. Right. You're all right. Do this. Da, 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 da. And like you're not teaching the lesson to the kid.
Like
you're
a varsity blues.
Win. You're just trying to win.
I agree with that.
If you're not, if you're trying
you're
to win.
You're vicariously living through him.
Yeah. So like the thing is like, you know, and I look back and it's like, I played football with you. Like, I know you were sorry. Like, and I know I would run you over. And I would do it right now.
Okay.
You know, I'll do it. And I'm not saying that being cocky. What I'm saying is like, you know, don't sit here getting on the kid because the kid's 7 years old said, oh, that other kid's terrible or sorry, because he's another 7 year old kid.
Right. Yeah.
I'm 38, you're 38. So, like, if I were to go against you and I'm training, I'm doing everything that I'm supposed to do, then I should be able to mop you up.
What
so, like,
doing?
Now let your son sit over there and say, hey, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? Come on, dad. Toughen up. Come on, dad. You know, like, right. So the thing is, like,
imagine me doing wind sprints.
So, like, for me, I don't
being sorry, you still have to teach your kids certain lessons. We'll go for ahead and put it, we'll go ahead and put it like,
damn,
I hate making my bed, right? Well, good. Well, simple. I hate making my bed.
We just went over this.
But,
and how it changes your mind in the morning.
I teach my son to make his bed because I know that's right.
Yeah.
So even though I'm not even in that same mental, I can still show him that this is the right way because I know in myself that's not the right way.
But I don't think that that's what he's saying.
Right reason. You're leading for the right reason, though. You know, a football
so you don't
coach,
think they're leading for the right reason?
No, because, like, I mean, think about it. Like, at the end of the year, everybody...
His negative reinforcement is basically what he's saying. He's like, you're just yelling at me. You're not teaching me.
And think about it.
You're not encouraging me.
To put the
I don't think people just yell because they want to yell.
I think they do. I know they do.
We can agree on that. There's no way they just want to yell, right?
I think the point is...
Why yell?
I think the point of what he's trying to say is, you know what I mean, the way you're going about it. Like, you think that you're teaching your kid and you're lifting them up, but you're really just tearing them down, and you weren't even that good. You know what I mean? That's what I get from you. Yeah. Like, okay. The way you're going about it, you're not even giving him an insight. You're telling him to be tough, but it's like, no. What are you actually teaching him?
So what I've learned is that people don't follow what you say. They follow what you do. You know? So, and that's what I learned a lot about myself. You know, I've never followed anybody ever in my life. I've never looked at somebody in Beaver County and been like, yo, I want to be like that guy. And I'm not saying that. Who?
Jerry. Derek.
But I'm saying, I'm older than Jerry.
So. I know. You was 11. He was 6. He was like, I'm just good with Derek.
But the thing is, though, is like, I have people in my life now. I'm not saying like, oh, I want to be that guy. But there's certain things that they do in their life. Like, for an example, I'll give you a prime example. The Matt Factory. The head coach there, his name is Coach Isaac Greeley. You know, he goes every single day. And he puts it all on the line. And he coaches, but he doesn't tell us, you guys are going to run. You guys are going to do this. He's doing it with us. And then whenever we have competition, he whoops everybody's ass. And he's 45 years old. So, like, I respect that a lot more than somebody that's like, yo, I'm the wrestling coach. I'm going to go stand in the corner. I'm going to tell you guys are this. You guys are that. Da, 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 da.
And you hear that, Joe.
1,000%.
But he's walking out.
And that's what I do. When I go out with the young boy and I run with him.
And I think that.
In the gym.
You ain't running nowhere for a minute,
and I think when you hear that certain parent,
you
can tell which one's actually involved and who's been there.
Yeah.
Because the things that you're saying are like, that don't even make sense, bro.
Yeah.
So I get what you're saying. And I think that's different than someone who might have suffered. But they do have the insight and they do know how to get through to this kid. You know what I mean? Because I feel like I was one of those coaches. I'm an average player, but great at getting through to the kids.
Yeah.
And I'm willing to go do the research, get the insight.
And it's not saying everybody doesn't have the credentials, because you didn't have to be a phenomenal athlete to be able to coach.
Right.
You know, but you just got to know what it feels like to be out there.
Right.
To get
and
hit.
You have to and you have to give a fuck.
It helps. I think it helps big time to know
out
there. You know what I'm saying?
So big time. You know, like if somebody's hurt, like my son, like he comes to me crying, like he'll smack the ball off the ground, hit his face, and he's like, ooh, and I'm like, you're okay. Because I've been hit in the face with the ball before, so I know.
You know. You know.
You know, so.
How old your son?
He just turned 6.
Oh, it's about that time.
Damn. How old's your daughter?
What you going to do?
She just turned 8.
What you going to do? Are you going to wait or are you going to thrust him in?
For what?
And what we're talking about.
The football. The CTE. Like, are you going to put him in?
He doesn't really know much about my sports career. Like, you know, I don't really talk about. He ain't see
the lineage. Oh, nah, get out of here,
I
bro!
I don't really show them that type of stuff because I want them.
I could have swore you had a Rochester helmet hanging from the ceiling.
A whole ram hanging on Google.
This big old head. You probably thought I wore here.
So you're letting them grow into their own and find the things that they
like,
want to find.
You know, let them figure out. Like my son, he's really an American Ninja Warrior.
Okay,
and there ain't nothing American Ninja Warrior about me.
Okay.
You know.
Jiu-jitsu.
I was like, what are you talking about? That's like, exactly what you are.
That's exactly what you are.
Not. It's like if we went on hanging rings and stuff. Like, I'm too heavy for that.
Yeah,
like,
but
no, you're not,
still,
though. But, but if you got into it, you would lean that up. You'd have like that one.
You're that same kind of warrior, bro. Like, that's what it is.
Is your daughter into sports?
She's in the basketball, and then she's into like the American Ninja Warrior stuff, too.
Man, this was love, man.
Told you, man. I told you.
It was love, man. I had a great time talking to you, bro.
I appreciate you guys having me. I had a good time.
It was a blast, man. This man came on. He was nervous. Nervous, and killed it.
Being weird.
No, I really couldn't tell you was
he
nervous.
He called me last night. And he was like this. He was like, "Hey man, listen, I'm just going over this outline." I was like, "What are you talking about?" I knew exactly what he was talking about, but I was just like, I wanted him to like.
Well, I didn't know if you wanted me to fill it out.
No. That's what I'm saying.
I just always let people see what we do.
I ain't done homework forever.
Right.
I don't like blind interviews. Yeah. So when I interview people, I'm like, "This is what I want." Boom, boom.
Yeah.
Not necessarily in this order because we just kind of like popped off on it. But he was like, "Man, listen, when I'm answering the questions, like, can I answer them like to you?" Because like, and I'm like.
Yeah. No. What I meant by that is like,
let's go.
I didn't want to like type them. I wasn't sure. If you wanted me to type them all out and send it back to you, like what my response
was. No.
So I was telling him what I was saying to Seth is I was like, why don't I just like go over these with you real quick, like so I can give you the answers, like make sure like.
Oh,
you know,
you was ready.
Right. Interview.
I didn't want to come in here and not give you guys anything less than my best. You know,
hey man, you did phenomenal. You did phenomenal, man. Like I appreciate you coming on here for sure.
I appreciate you guys having me. This first time I've ever done any podcast.
Okay.
Really?
You
know,
yeah.
Man, that's love.
I've had other people ask me, but I'm like, you know, that's not my
thing. No. It was great. We got to tap into your youth, college life.
For sure.
What you are as a man. I think that's dope, man.
I think the biggest thing that has really helped me get to like where I'm at is just like the mindset, like really dialing in and getting in touch with that. Because, you know, I think like, to be honest with you, man, like sports just came natural to me. You know, like I didn't have to. I'm not saying I have to try because I definitely had to try. I wasn't that damn good. But
I'd never seen you in the weight room.
Yeah, but I did lift weights. You could ask Mike Wells. You guys all know Mike. Ask Mike. I used to take him over to the hill, and I would not let him beat me in any damn thing.
Hey, young boy. Tag Mike wait to put this out.
No, but here's the thing, though. But you got to say, Jermaine's always been like a different kind of. He's that guy that's just like, there's certain guys that like, even if they don't work out, they just got it.
I would be so pissed. Furious. I would be so pissed. Like, so I'm not going to fuck with him.
Dana was the same way.
I know who he is. I know who he is. But I would be so mad if someone hit me with wavy hair like that, dog. could you fucking imagine?
Like, what's poppin'?
Could you imagine getting punched by a man who has that fucking 1970s doo-wop hair?
I was like, is he Mexican, Puerto Rican?
Get my baby powder, dog.
I'm like, way pop. Hey, that's what I'm saying. Bro, listen.
They just got it.
I would be so pissed. Furious. I would be so pissed. Like, so I'm not going to fuck with him.
I know
who he is. I know who he is. But I would be so mad if someone hit me with wavy hair like that, dog. could you fucking imagine?
Like, what's poppin'?
Could you imagine getting punched by a man who has that fucking 1970s doo-wop hair?
I was like, is he Mexican, Puerto Rican?
Get my baby powder, dog.
I'm like, way pop. Hey, that's what I'm saying. Bro, listen. No, I want no problems with this man,
and then
bro.
Turn around and giggle about it.
But you know, he's going to hit me, Chief.